Hello, my dear.
Bless you.
God bless you.
Quite a discussion going on this morning.
Yes. Even
there between you and Biggie.
Yes.
But he teases a little, you know.
Yes, I know.
He realizes that you do understand that we endeavor, of course, at all times to do the very best we can for those on earth whom we love.
Yes.
But, of course, there are occasions when, as much as we desire to do something, we cannot. There are limitations.
Yes, of course.
I feel our medium is not at all well.
No.
No, not too good at all. I've got a state of bearing.
Never mind, my son. We'll go after you.
Oh, I realize that.
Have you some special questions you wish to ask me, child?
Well, I thought, as Easter had just gone, and last year you were very disappointed not to talk about Easter, I'd like you to talk about the significance of the resurrection. I think what puzzles people or misleads them about Christ's resurrection is the disappearance of his body, and that much makes them think they're going to rise with a body.
Well,
I'll set you up.
Personally, I think that we can completely ignore the story of the disappearance of the physical body. That is from the point of view that so many Christians adopt the idea that because it disappeared that it would therefore be physically resurrected. I think I'm quite sure that the body was hidden by his followers because they wanted to make sure that all would be well, that the body wouldn't be removed by the Romans or perhaps some group or organized numbers of people. You know, there were many enemies at the time,
yeah.
And I'm sure that the body was removed for safety. I don't think it's important, frankly. What is important is the story of the resurrection. The resurrection of the spirit. The physical body cannot be resurrected, but the spirit is the resurrected body. And the fact that he appeared unto his disciples and appeared unto his followers and appeared unto the women in the garden, you know, there seems to me a great deal of mystery that has been built up over the centuries of time. And of course one must remember that a lot of this has been deliberate in past ages. I think in the earliest days of the church it was a desire to build this deliberately, to make it a mystical thing.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, practically all religions, certainly religions before Christianity, had this mysticism. The mysticism was part of the, you might say, background which to some extent held people together in ancient religions. People were always looking for signs and wonders and mysteries. And the whole story of the Christ is not a mystery. It's not mystical. It is natural. It is real. And I think that the church, over the centuries, individual members of the church built up a great deal of mystery, which, quite frankly, has done more harm than good. Christ appeared in a real sense to the disciples, and what you've done materialized so that his body could be seen and felt. But this, of course, as you know from psychic experience, is not an uncommon thing. It has happened before and since materialization, temporary materialization of the body. The spirit of the Christ is always around for those who are prepared to accept and to go, but not necessarily in a formal body, but in a spiritual sense. There's too much talk made, as it seems to me, about the physical aspect of the resurrection, and not enough of the spiritual. The physical aspect is of no real importance at all. It is the realization that Christ overcame the body, that Christ overcame the world. People put too much store on the physical body and the physical aspects. It is the mental and the spiritual, the discerning and the realization that must come through the power of the Holy Spirit, and the fact that the Spirit overcomes all things.
Yes. Thank you. I can honestly say that I feel that Christ is becoming a greater reality to me every day.
The Christ is a reality, not only as an individual, but as a power, as a divine influence. I think that so many people just cannot understand or realize the full meaning and significance of the power of the Christ. what it can do and what it can achieve. You see, it is that over here there is this tremendous force for good which emanates from the Christ sphere, which is brought into being or brought into action, you might say, by innumerable souls who come to earth in various ways, endeavouring to assist and to guide and to uplift. But it's all the Christ spirit. We are, as it were, agents or messengers. We are disciples. We are those whose task it is to do the will of the Most High. We are, in a sense, deputizing. In a sense, we are giving forth that vitality and power which is freely given to us, returning it to earth, returning it to those on earth whose needs are many and great, and particularly those who, like yourself, endeavouring to serve. The Christ spirit is at all times at work.
Yes, thank you.
You see, people will have this firm, fixed idea, this really, quite frankly, almost materialistic conception of the Christ. I mean, even those in your world who are, by nature, upbringing and background religious, who regularly attend that church, who regularly read that Bible. In fact, many so-called religious people, strangers it may seem, though they never admit it, have the most materialistic aspect of Christ, have the most material aspect of heaven. They assume that Christ will be in a physical sense and form, identically the same as he was on earth, and possibly looking very like they've seen him in their pictures, which invariably, of course, are quite idiotic. And they will assume quite wrongly that Christ will be in a kind of world which is very typical or very like unto their picture books or imaginings of scriptural happenings. You know, it's an extraordinary picture that so many religious people have built up, which is totally unlike the truth. Our world is a living, real world. It's so tremendous and so vast that one cannot even begin to depict or describe it. Words in themselves are quite inadequate. There is no sort of confined aspect. So many assume that when they come here, that they will be in a kind of biblical world in which there is a great soul who sits on a great throne and that Christ will be at his right hand. In other words, they have this most extraordinary picture, which is totally unlike the reality. This is a world in which there are many, many mansions, as Christ himself said, many aspects of life, many conditions, and one will obviously go into the environment to which one is best suited, and one will gradually evolve and gradually become more and more aware and conscious of the realities of the power of the Spirit, and one will ascend into a higher state of being over possibly what one might term, if one can use time with our world, aeons of time. But the point is that one must rid oneself of this extraordinary picturization which so many people have of the Christ and his mission and his work and the world to come. They should realize that this is a reality. This is a world of reality in which we live real lives, in which we have real beings, in which we have shape and form, we have interests, and we have many aspects of life which in many senses are, of course, removed far from earth, and yet there are aspects of our life which could be called similar. You must try, and everyone must try, to realize that this is a real world in which real people live and have their being, and that Christ is, and many other great souls and teachers and prophets, all who came with a message and a purpose in life to bring to the earth a new realization, a new understanding for their time and age. You see, the point is that there are many pointers, there are many ways to this realization. No one suggests that everyone, that each one has the whole or the complete picture. Everyone has an aspect of it. There are many facets to the diamond, you might say, of truth. One must not become narrow or bigoted. One must not be foolish as to assume that one's own particular knowledge or belief is necessarily the only one that matters, is the only true one. Every religion has a basis of truth. But the tragedy is that man builds around that basis of truth so much that is dross, so much that is foolish, so much that is wrong, so much that is in itself obscuring the fundamental truth. That is why we are so anxious that people should know and should understand the purity of Christ's work and mission and the reality of it at the same time. It was, in a sense, though a spiritual mission, in also a sense a material one. He was a practical person. He lived in a practical, difficult world, and he understood many of the complications, if not all, you might say, of the human being. But so many people assume quite wrongly that Christ was a visionary, that Christ had no sort of material understanding or conception of things. He was very much a man, very much immersed in material things. He understood a great deal, much more than people credit him with. But at the same time, he saw that these things were only minor things. The major things were the things of the mind and of the spirit. That is why he could do and repeat so often the things which seemed today, on looking back, miraculous. But then again, he said greater things than these should be do, for I go unto my Father. And yet no one before or since has done any of the things comparable to Jesus in the form of what is termed miracles. But he knows or knew that every individual had within himself this power to achieve and to overcome material things and obstacles, and achieve and do these things in the spirit and create what is termed miracles. In other words, he chose his disciples deliberately, not so much because of their background or education or lack of it, but because of not only of their sincerity of purpose, but because of their psychic powers too. He could see within them that there was a possibility that they could be used in a psychic sense and in a spiritual sense. But of course, so much is misunderstood and misinterpreted. The Orthodox Church has not really got any true idea of the real Christ. Mm-hmm. And then it's a tragedy when they can realize that Christ was, in the highest sense, that he was a medium, and that he was able to do and achieve these things because of his mediumistic powers, and that he was very much in touch materially as well as mentally and spiritually. He was in touch much more than people are inclined to understand or believe. He was not afraid. He had great faith, great power to overcome the material. But he was human. People do not seem to credit him with the fact that he was very much a real human being.
Yes, they exaggerate the divinity.
Yes, the divine power was there. Of course it was, obviously. But people don't seem to us understand that Christ was born in the normal way, and that he was a man in every sense, that he certainly overcame the flesh, he certainly overcame the material, but it didn't necessarily come easy to him. He had to fight, he had to overcome, he had to learn, he had to grow, as it were, gradually to the realization of his true understanding and mission. He didn't come naturally and easily. He had to work and had to fight too.
Yes.
But anyway, the Easter story is the greatest story of all, for it is the resurrection that is important.
Yes.
The realization that death is not the end, that life is continuous, and that we do truly overcome. That is the great blessing and the great joy, that death is the gateway to life.
Yes.
No one need fear it. Bless you, child.
God bless you.
Farewell.
Thank you for your effort.
Are you finished?
I think we did very well, Mr. Thank you.